This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Ramona Shelburne's going to join us here in just about 10 minutes. We'll get back to the Dubs and find out what the hell's going on with the Nuggets, because she's up in Sacramento with the Nuggets tonight. And so we're looking real forward to talking to Momo, and we'll get back to the Western Conference boogie that's going on this week. 7 o'clock tonight is going to be bananas, okay? The Warriors are playing the Spurs, and the Nuggets are going to be playing the Kings, and the Clippers are going to be playing portions of the Rockets, and there's just all kinds of stuff going on. The Thunder will be in Phoenix against the Suns. Who cares about that? Those two teams' fate all set. But that's all happening in the 7 to 7:30 window tonight. So that's going to be crazy. So we'll be all over it. I just think it's what's really fascinating is this team's almost making me sort of believe in something that's like in the woo-woo neighborhood. And here's what I mean by this. Every Giants fan that I've talked to is like, this feels so different. It looks different. It's more fun. And I'm like, okay, is the roster that different? Like, Adamas is here.
And Jung-Hoo Lee is here.
Jung-Hoo Lee's not hurt, but he was here at the beginning of last year also. A bunch of the guys are hitting a buck 80. Adamas, a buck 80. Tyler Fitzgerald, a buck 80. Patrick Bailey, a buck 80.
Lamont Wade.
Lamont Wade.
Buck 14.
Buck 14. And also, apparently not the guy people wanted playing first base this year.
Actually, buck five now.
Buck five, okay?
Buck and a nickel.
Right. But Luis Matos is up. Ramos is exciting. I really like him. He's holding down left field. Part of it is also the contracts. You're like, oh, not like a lot of these guys are going to be here for a while. Chapman has a different look this year because it's like, no, that's your third baseman. That's your third baseman for a long time. He might be the best defensive player I think I've ever seen in my life, for crying out loud. It's insane. But the whole thing has like this Buster Posey fingerprint on it that makes some of the same things we were watching the last 2 years look different this year. Some of them are the exact same things. Bailey's been here. Wade's been here.
Right.
Yaz is still out in right field. By the way, he's playing phenomenal this year. So a lot of it's the exact same, but it feels different.
Well, a lot of it is different, and some of the things that are different are what we talked about. For one, you have a starting nine that is pretty much your starting nine. It's more like a starting 7.5, which is fine. Like, Casey Schmidt's going to play a little first. Wilmer's your DH, and you have Lamont Wade, and you mentioned right field with Yaz. If it's a lefty, then, you know, it's not going to be Yaz out in right field. It's going to be Matos. But the other piece of it, and I can't even believe I'm going to use this word because it feels foreign, opener. They have not used an opener, nor do they plan on using an opener. They've got five starters, and they've got another one in the wings in Hayden Birdsong if they want to elevate him if there's an injury. But you have a starting rotation of five pitchers who are going to pitch. You're not trying to gin it up with some cockamamie opener and using Ryan Walker, which they did with success last year. Yep. And, you know, one inning of this guy and then three innings of that. And so this feels like a baseball team. And I go back to what I said earlier about the human element. And I do think that it's more important in baseball than any other sport. You play every day. You're with each other every day. And if you feel good about your environment, your group, your clubhouse, and the rest of it, then you're honestly going to do better.
Can I say one other thing?
Do it.
So I want everyone to hear this. Did you watch the game last night?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was Two Screen Tuesday, and pulled everything out there, and Warriors and Giants on both sides, and the Warriors game went really well, and the Giants never scored, and so that was annoying. But it was Tuesday. It was a home game on a Tuesday. The Giants wear different uniforms on a Tuesday. And I actually remember when the first City Connect uniforms came out, people were like, those are gross, those are yuck. And then they won most of the games, and people get used to it. And I think the same thing will happen here, but tons of negativity about the new City Connect jerseys. And I'm not here to tell you what you like. You like what you like, and if you don't like them, and if you're not into the meaning behind the lines and the glove and the color scheme, if you're not into it and that doesn't do anything for you, it doesn't do anything for you. But I sent out a tweet yesterday where I'm like, keep in mind, first of all, City Connects are supposed to get you talking, number one. And number two, if you're 40 or 45 or 50 or 55 or 60 or 65, it's not really targeted to you. Just an observation. I didn't say anything. I turned the game on last night and sat down. My 11-year-old plopped next to me and goes, dude, I really like those. And then my 16-year-old daughter came in for the third inning. She's like, what are they wearing? I really like those. And I went, what's going on.
City Connect.
There you go.
And then the next step to that is one of them saying, hey, Dad, where's your credit card?
That's right. Let's go to a game.
Not only let's go to a game, but I'm going to need one of those jerseys.
I'm going to need a hat. Yeah.
Or something. I'm going to need some purple something.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of the City Connect.
That's what's happening. So just keep that in mind. If you don't like it, maybe it's not for you. Warriors Wednesday is brought to you by Freedman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances and live working vignettes. Visit Freedman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today. 888-957-9570. The craziness of the Western Conference. How many contenders are there? We both think there are five. We will put that to Ramona Shelburne next. Is Brandon Pajemski the most important non-Big Three Warrior in the playoffs? This is what we're talking about. We're taking your phone calls, and Ramona Shelburne of ESPN joins us live from Sacramento, coming up next on Willard and Dibbs.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, I'm not going to waste any time because she's got stuff to do.
She's a busy woman.
Yeah, she's chasing the story that all of us are chasing, by the way.
Yeah.
But she's actually the one who's going to go do it.
And she's so thorough that she's not just going to call one person.
No.
She's going to do it all now.
No, she's going to do it all. And so Warriors-Spurs tonight, Warriors Live, Evan Giddings starts at 6. That's presented by Xfinity Stream Sports from the best seat in the house. With Xfinity, bring on the good stuff. This is the good stuff. This is our friend Ramona Shelburne of ESPN on the River Islands guest line, and she just dropped off. What happened? You hung up on her. Somebody hung up on her. She gone.
Yep.
She gone.
It's a good setup, though, too.
She gone.
You talked about the urgency. I complimented her.
Yeah.
You did the read. You built it up, and then
gone. She was like a Mike Yastrzemski at bat in the bottom of the tenth.
I can't wait to hear her take on just how stunning and strange it was that Michael Malone gets fired 4 days, or 4 games rather, before the end of the regular season, a team that is just 2 years removed from a title and seemed to be not playing great, but not broken, right?
Well, let's find out.
All right,
are we good? Okay, here comes Ramona Shelburne of ESPN. Hi, Momo. How you doing?
What's up, Mark? How are you?
We're doing great here. What the hell's going on with the Nuggets? Is that why you flew to Sac?
Yeah, I'm doing their game today, and, you know, it's one of these, I always just kind of parachute in. That's always how we work, right? You know, they happen to be on the West Coast, so I was like, okay, I can just fly up there. But I've sort of been on the phones the last 24 hours since that happened, and I think it's, you know, it's It's weird. When Taylor Jenkins got fired, I was really surprised because, you know, usually just people just wait till the end of the year. Like, they just play it out. And I think the Nuggets, you know, could have done the same thing. They could have just waited till the end of the year and played it out. But I get why they didn't, too, in the sense that you have Jokic in his prime. You lose four in a row. You've kind of been feeling this way for most of the season. I think they had kind of come to the conclusion that they were probably going to, you know, change the coach and then, you know, decide what they were doing in the front office. They kind of thought they were going to change the front office there. But they don't want to waste one more minute, you know, one more day. And I wouldn't either if I had Nikola Jokic, right? And you feel like, I don't know if this is going to help this year. Maybe it's too late, whatever it is. Like, but, you know, every call I've had with you for the past 2 years was about the Warriors is they're trying to do something big, something that matters, right? Because they have Steph in the end of his prime now. He's in the golden years, right? But I get why you do that, because you have a special player on your team.
So this firing was not so much episodic where something happened and it prompted it, but it was more just systemic where things had gotten to a point where it was going to be broken, and so they acted now as opposed to waiting for the offseason.
Yeah, I that's a good way to put it. I mean, they definitely, you know, from what I understand, like, I think they might have done this around the All-Star break if they wouldn't have gone on an 8-game winning streak. You know how sometimes, like, sometimes it feels like people are waiting for the team to lose a little bit and they can justify the firing, and then the point where they were about to do it, they went on a streak, and so they staved it off for a little while. But I don't know how. You know, the Grizzlies certainly haven't benefited from their move, right, so far. They've just kind of continued the free fall they were in. So I don't really know how that helped. But they did something just to do something. The Nuggets, I don't know. We'll see. We're about to find out, right? I mean, I just think this Western Conference, guys, they were the 2 seed for a really long time, and now they could be in the play-in. They don't get it together in the last couple games here, right? I mean, that's pretty stark.
I mean, this game that they're about to play tonight could send them to that play-in situation, no doubt. And so, Ramona Shelburne of ESPN, this is something that as a group we were talking about earlier today and looking at the Nuggets situation, and it does feel like there was a little bit of the two-timeline thing, like trying to balance, right? Yeah. We've got draft picks, but we've got Jokic. Yeah. And so here it blew up, and the Warriors went through something similarly over the last handful of years.
And it
didn't blow up. Somehow the group was all on the same page. So what would you say about that in kind of comparing the situations, and what does it mean that the Warriors were sort of able to do that without everybody all hating each other?
I know. I mean, you did lose Bob Myers along the way.
You did.
Right? I mean, Bob ducked out, you know. And I think, you know, there was a couple of trades that sort of didn't work, but you're right. There's a lot of similarities. They were definitely doing the two timeline thing. And they also the Nuggets were also doing a two timeline thing where they had a coach that wasn't really doing the two timeline thing like the front office wanted him to. Right. That obviously, you know, that the same thing happened in with the Warriors, right? They had all these lottery picks, and Steve Kerr didn't necessarily play him right away or develop them in the way that the front office was hoping to, especially for the lottery picks. Now, the Nuggets, they didn't have lottery picks. They had, you know, late first-round picks. Usually, you're lucky if one of those guys turns into a starter. And so I get why Michael Malone, just like a lot of veteran coaches, would not throw the rookie in there right away or give him all that time, or would prefer to play a veteran that he trusts. And so I think what's interesting with what's interesting with this situation now is these guys, you know, they have Jokic, who's due for an extension, right? They just paid Murray. They just paid Gordon. And they have Michael Porter Jr., who's a good player, but probably overpaid for your fourth best player on a team. And instead of being like the Warriors, where they don't have this arena that is light years ahead and prints money and all that stuff, they play in a kind of an older arena. They just barely worked out their TV deal, and I don't think they can just blow past the second apron or the salary cap and pay all these luxury taxes forever, and it's something that every franchise in this league is looking at now, which is if you have an expensive team, you can't can't be a first round exit. You can't be a play-in team. And like, I know things have changed so dramatically since Jimmy Butler got there, but like the Warriors were in the same place just a little while ago before that one move, right? They were an expensive team that was heading for the play-in or was lucky to get in the play-in. There's a lot of really good teams out there. And I remember talking to the Heat before they traded Jimmy Butler, and they always thought that their buyer for Jimmy Butler would come from the Western Conference, because there's a lot of teams out there in the West that are really good, that think they can win a title and are going to end up in the play-in. And if you're one of those teams, you got to think long and hard about how you're playing things, right? If I'm Minnesota, I'm thinking about what I'm doing. They look like that could be a play-in team, and that's a team we all thought was going to break through this year. So this is a very volatile situation because there's so much at stake in terms of money that people are being paid, in terms of expectations, and the competitiveness in the West is really hard to wrap your head around how close this really is between the teams 3 through 8 right now.
Yeah, 49 wins could get you a 7 seed, which
unbelievable.
You know, that's alarming. We were talking about the 07 season when the Warriors won 48 and they were the 9 before there was a play-in. The 8 that year was Denver and they won 50. So, Ramon, just one more about the Denver situation, because I'm so baffled, but is it more discord between Malone, the GM, and ownership, or is it Malone, the GM, and the actual players?
I would go your second option. I think there was a cold war between the coach and the front office, the coach and the GM, right? And that just made it hard for everybody else to do their jobs. You know, it just, if you're not on the same page, right? You know, Calvin Booth's a really good, I think he's a really good GM. I think he's really smart. He drafted well. He came up with a strategy to sort of extend the Jokic prime years by drafting and developing these young guys. But that requires the coach to play the young guys and to hit on the young guys, right? For him to hit. And so that just wasn't working. And you could feel that tension between the front office and the coaching staff the whole way. But I think, you know, 10 years is a long time for a coach, right? I mean, Steve Kerr has been there since, I think Malone's been there 1 year longer than Kerr. Is that right? I'm trying to think of their timelines. Kerr started in 15. Malone, it's about the same. Yeah,
about the same. Yeah.
So, like, it's a long time for one voice, you know, that there's a reason why 10 years in the NBA, even when you're a great coach, are not that long. You know, like, Spoelstra's been there for a long time now. Pop, you know, obviously he's dealing with his own situation in San Antonio, but I think Malone had been there a long time, and he's an old-school guy. He's hard on the guys, but he wins. Very smart. And so when you're winning, people tolerate that. And when you're losing, they just don't, right? You're not as affable or you're not as whatever. And I think that friction between the front office and coach, I think it just kind of made it hard for everyone else. And some of that, and this is where when you're the owner, you get to, you know, you get to fire everyone else, not yourself. But I think it was kind of created by some external pressure that affected everyone, where I think Malone got paid after the championship and he got an extension, but nobody else really did. Either his staff or in the front office. And then everybody kind of has this feeling of, you know, am I going to still be here? And, you know, the person you pay is the person you empower, right? But you have a GM who's, you're empowering him to make these moves and to take a team in a certain direction, but you're not necessarily giving him that contract that says you're going to be here to do it. And people know that, you know, like, right. People feel that. They know that. They know who's where the power is. And, you know, it just made it hard for everyone. I guess I'm surprised they fired both, but I'm not surprised they made a change. I thought it would probably be one or the other, but I think in the end, ownership was like, you know what, let's just change the whole dynamic.
Ramona Shelburne, ESPN, we know you got to run. I wanted to get this from you, though, real quick. You're so close to the Jimmy Butler thing. And I want to know what you know about, maybe even behind the scenes, how well this is working and how realistic are championship goals. Like, if I just said Cavs, Celtics, Lakers, Warriors, Thunder, did I just name the champion this year, you think?
Probably, yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, I think the two in the East that you named are probably the, you know, that's going to come from one of those two. I guess I wouldn't be shocked if somebody else came up out of the East, but those two feel like pretty heavy favorites. And then I don't know. We're all kind of discounting Houston because they're young. I don't know why we do that. I also saw the Lakers beat Houston recently, but Houston Houston kind of did a number on your Warriors, so yep. I don't know. That's we got to respect them until somebody beats them. And Oklahoma City, again, young team, really good. All the metrics say they should win it this year. They're so far in front of everyone else. But, I'm one of those guys, like, I never count out players like Steph or LeBron or Jimmy or Draymond. I never count them out because they've been there before. They've won it. You know, Jimmy hasn't won it, but he's been to the finals, obviously. He knows what it takes. And, like, when they're older and they only have a few more cracks at it, like, they don't usually let those slip away. So, I mean, that's why I just kind of think it's that group. I think you're right. And I gotta say, what did you think of that game last week when the Lakers and Warriors played?
That was the one level. I came in here the next morning, Ramona, and I was like, that was the one I needed to see. I'm now convinced.
Yeah. I mean, I felt the same way. Like, you know, the Lakers sort of have Houston's. I don't want to say they have their number, but they feel like they could beat them. But I hadn't seen a game with the Jimmy Warriors and the Luka Lakers yet until last week, and I thought that was pretty encouraging for the Warriors, you know, in any series. And I also thought the game they played against the Rockets, I thought that game, you know, they look real tired to me.
Yep.
I thought that was a young team. They got physical and aggressive with them, and they were at the end of like this. What did they have, a 13-day stretch there where they were out on the road and they just came home? I mean, I'm going to give them a pass on that, but I thought that again, Lakers game made me take the Warriors real seriously.
Yeah, I think we're with you. Hey, Momo, thanks so much for getting to us today. All right, have a good night.
You got it. Thanks.
All right, there goes Ramona Shelburne of ESPN in Sacramento getting ready for Nuggets and Kings and giving us a bunch of Nuggets along the way.
And I probably shouldn't have gone so deep with the Nuggets because time was short, but I am fascinated by the way it went and just where the discord was. Was it the coach and GM and ownership? It turns out it was just probably the coach and the GM and also the players, where she makes good points about the Warriors too. Like, if you're going to spend all that money and you're a play-in team, well, then ownership has a right to try to look to make some changes.
No doubt. And Steph has literally said that out loud himself over the last couple of years. Like, we need to go earn the right to do this. And so, I don't know. There's a few things that come out of this. All of this with any of these teams is relevant to any of the teams that are in there. So I am curious to see kind of what unfolds with the Nuggets, to see what kind of an opponent they're going to be in the Western Conference. But for me, the umbrella view, like where my mind goes when I see what's happened in Memphis, when I see what's happened in Denver, I come back to Golden State and I go, dude, bravo. This, for those of us fans who just want to eat nachos and watch a game, we don't really often give enough credit for how difficult it is to navigate all of these situations. And I know that people, oh gosh, that sounds like all so milk and cookie, but let's review this now based on what she just said. The Warriors navigated two timelines. Now, you lost Bob Myers. What an interesting way to put it, because of course, we were told, Bob just wants to, you know, spend more time with the kids. Of course, 4 seconds later, he's working at ESPN. So, like, when she says it that way, it does bring to mind the idea of Steve and Joe Lacob and the front office and what were all of their opinions and were they blending perfectly with regard to the future of the organization? And then how do you take all those opinions and enter Steph Curry's opinion into the room, and Draymond's going to be a free agent, and Jonathan Kuminga's agent is calling shams, and all of the things that are going on. Don't discount how hard it is to do all that, stay together, and stay relevant. And here we are, three games away from the playoffs and the mantra that they've been talking about for the last 3 months, which is meaningful basketball.
Right.
I don't want to lose that. That's incredible.
It is, especially when you look at it from the 10,000 foot view, which is we're trying to maximize the Steph Curry era. And you mentioned it, Bob Myers, successful GM, leaves. And so Mike Dunleavy now has to step into the breach and not only get the draft right, which he did, Pods and TJD. And, you know, you follow it up with Quentin Post, who was a great find. I know he's probably going to be your 10th or 11th man in the playoffs, but you did well in the draft. You had to navigate a Klay Thompson exit so that you actually got something for Klay, which you did. You found a DeAnthony Melton in the mid-level. You turned him into Schroeder, which eventually turned into Jimmy Butler, and that's the piece that really cemented the early part of the Dunleavy legacy, is you were able to bring in Jimmy Butler, who has turned you from a 10 or 11 seed play in, and maybe you're hoping to go on a run to, you might be a top four seed. You have an outside shot at the three, but whatever seed you get, you've turned into a completely different team because of the maneuver that Mike Dunleavy and company were able to make. So you see what happened in Denver and Memphis and Sacramento, and yet in the midst of this thing maybe breaking apart, you know, Ramona talked about two timelines and how that's no longer a thing. Now it's one timeline, and that timeline is this year. And maybe next year.
Maybe.
And maybe the year after.
And no one's even really worried about
that
right now. Like,
yeah.
It's all... I do think there's a conversation that was happening a lot over the last year and a half, and I do believe that we have found a final answer with it. And I think most of us actually... we would moonlight on both sides of this issue. So I'm not trying to come at anybody who was wrong or right or whatever. That doesn't even matter at this point. But you know the conversation I'm talking about. For a year and a half, right here on 95.7 The Game, it was like, do you still believe there's something left in the Steph tank or not? And there were even those who would call and suggest, you got to trade Steph, as painful as it is, because there's no point in actually pursuing this. Well, that side was wrong. And I don't care what happens next year or the year after that. And I stand here and say that as someone who wanted a move but didn't want this move. And I was wrong about that. It turns out this was the available move. And luckily for the Warriors, it was the right move. And whether this ends in a championship or not, you're on the same page as I am, as is Ramona is, when we say the words Cavs, Celtics, Thunder, Laker, Warriors. Most of us believe we probably just named the NBA champion. That, for me, in and of itself, is an affirmative on if you thought there was nothing left in the Steph tank, you were on the wrong side of the fence. We're here. This is meaningful basketball. And the Warriors are one of the favorites to win the NBA championship.
And you could even take that group of five, and it wouldn't be outlandish to think that four of those five will be the last four teams standing. And I know seed is a part of it, but 1-2 yep. in the East, Cleveland and Boston. I think that if I was to predict the Eastern Conference final, well, the obvious chalk pick would be Cleveland against Boston. They are clear-cut the two best teams. I know New York can make noise against Boston. I think that they're going to break down the way Coach Tibbs runs them into the ground.
They're just not good enough.
Well, in the West, depending on the seed, I still think that if you want to take LA, OKC, and Golden State, you're likely going to get two of those, and Houston's got a lot to say about it as well.
They might.
So maybe those three... two of those three aren't the final ones in the Western Conference, but I do like your group of five as we start to get here into playoff basketball next week.
I'm on FanDuel right now, and those are the top five. Those are the top five in terms of championship odds. Those are them. Thunder 1, Celtics 2, Cavs 3, Warriors and Lakers tied for 4.
And what are the Thunder odds right now to win the NBA championship?
Plus 170.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not much.
Super chalky.
Super chalky.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before. They're number one all-time in point differential for the regular year, and the teams that are 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 on that list all went on to win the NBA championship. So point differential is something you either believe in or you don't. Oklahoma City's been so good in the regular year, and the other teams that have been that good have gone on to win the title. So Oklahoma City right now is in that group. Of the top six, five of them have won the title. The other one is OKC, and they're a favorite to win the title.
Exactly. And, you know, she mentioned, she's like, I don't know why we always do this to the Rockets. They may have something to say about this. I get it. They're young. Okay, if I told you Thunder, Celtics, Cavs, Lakers, Warriors, those are all your clear-cut top five in terms of NBA title odds. How many more teams do you think I name before I get to the Vegas odds of the Houston Rockets?
Well, I would say probably three or actually four. I think of four teams that are more favored.
Who are they?
Denver.
Okay.
I still think that there's money.
That is correct.
On Denver.
They are number six.
I would say New York would be a team.
They are tied with the Nuggets at number six.
And then you would probably look.
So that's seven teams that are out of the way. How much further do we go until we get to Houston? Are they next?
I would put the Clippers ahead of them, too.
That is correct. The Los Angeles Clippers are next at plus 4,400. Do we go to the Rockets next? They're the two seed.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to say yes, but I won't be embarrassed if Indiana's ahead of them. Because the Eastern Conference, they have an easier path.
Indiana is not ahead of them.
Okay. But there is a team ahead of them.
Someone else is.
Wow. Geez. It could. Memphis? No.
Nope.
No, Memphis. Get out of here, Memphis.
Nope. Nope.
Oh, Milwaukee.
Nope.
Portland? I'm panicking.
No.
I'm panicking.
Portland?
I'm panicking, Mark.
It's the team who gets the You Blew It Award of the Night.
Oh, boy.
The Minnesota Timberwolves.
Okay.
Actually are plus 7,000 while the Rockets are plus 9,000. So you could look at this one of two ways. You could sit here and go, dude, man, the Rockets get disrespected, and I think that that's wonderful value. Well, go ahead. Go ahead then. Put your hard-earned money on plus 9,000.
Dude, 90-1?
90-1. 90-1. Okay?
Yep.
You can go put $10 on that, and they'll give you $1,000 if you're right almost. Why? Because they're not going to win it. That's why. They're not going to win it. They can be as young and talented and athletic and tall and Amen Thompson. Boy, he opened my eyes. They're not going to win it. They're not going to win it. And I told you this earlier. I have arrived at a spot where I am no longer looking at these standings on a nightly basis to worry about who the opponent is for the Warriors. I would say if there's anything I'm still rooting for, it is just to not play the Lakers in round one. If they play the Lakers, they play the Lakers. I'd rather it not be in round one because I do think that that's two of the best three teams in the West. I do think it's LeBron and Steph. And I just don't want to waste that in April. I'd like some more drama around that.
I would too.
So I'd like to push that a little later in a perfect world. But if you're asking me who, like, the Warriors should be scared of, the answer is no one. It doesn't mean they're going to win.
Right.
It just means that I don't really see any of these teams as overwhelmingly more difficult than any of the others. I think the Warriors will have a puncher's chance against any of them. And you know, a good handful of them, I would heavily favor them against. And by the way, you can go ahead and put the Rockets on that list for me. But they're not going to play the Rockets in round one.
Most likely.
Because they're going to stay out of the play-in tournament.
They should.
In my opinion.
And that becomes an interesting question. Like, would you rather have to go in the play-in and you get the Rockets? Or you avoid the play-in, but you got to face the Lakers, Denver, or the Clippers.
For me, that's an easy answer.
You want to avoid the play-in.
Hell yes.
Even if I guaranteed you that you were going to win that 7-8 and you get Houston.
Yeah, I don't want the fatigue. I don't want the stress. Yep. I don't want any of that.
I get it.
I want next week off. Off, 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 off. Steph, go golf. Off.
Warriors are, and I'm looking at it to make sure I get it right, they are 2-8. Against Denver and the two LAs this year. 2-8.
Yeah.
And they are 3-2 against Houston. So these are just facts, and I know numbers are normally just numbers, but
I really do think we need to make the effort, though, to put these stats together post-Jimmy. I don't know that games against Denver in November they're just not relevant to me to this conversation anymore.
And I'll have to look at the Clipper games that you played because odds are Kawhi didn't play in one, if not all of them.
Well, and I don't,
because he doesn't play basketball.
They haven't played the Clippers in weeks and weeks and weeks.
Yeah, yep. Kawhi hasn't played against the Warriors this year.
There you go.
And you're still 0-3.
And Jimmy Butler hasn't played against them. So like I look at it more like Jimmy's Warriors have played the Rockets twice, they're 1-1. They've played the Nuggets twice. They're 1-1.
They played the Lakers once.
They played the Lakers, and they're 1-0. Who else are we thinking about? They haven't really got
those are the ones.
Yeah, I haven't played the Thunder.
Nope.
So, like that to me is more of a snapshot of what you might see in a few weeks if we do this first series. You know?
Zubats don't care who you have.
Zubats. We see Zubats this weekend.
I can't wait.
See if it matters. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. And now we're really here for your phone calls. Rest of the way, 5 o'clock hour, heading into Warrior Basketball, 888-957-9570. Do you have any title contenders beyond our five? Warriors, Lakers, Thunder, Cavs, Celtics. Also, our poll question today. Who is the most important non-Big Three Warrior for their playoff success? Moody, Pods, Kuminga, or other? Dibs went with JK. I'll take Pods. What do you say? 888-957-9570. We will take your phone calls next and throughout the 5 o'clock hour on Willard and Dibs.
Pajemski comes right, takes it down the right side of the paint, spins back left, scoop to the hoop, oh, no good, rebound Santos. Back to Pajemski, left corner, takes a three, it's up and good. Pajemski 4 of 6 now from 3, give him 20 points on the night. That's 91-57, Warriors on top with 2:10 to go here in the third.
Bay Area, it's Brandon Pajemski. You're listening to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
For my money, that's the most important non-Steph, Dre, Jimmy Warrior going into the postseason. And it's not because of liking any player more than any other player or anything like that. It's just, it's really a matter of numbers are numbers and numbers are numbers. Like, Brandon's going to play a ton of minutes. Brandon doesn't really have a backup. Brandon has found his confidence, and Brandon is in a flow. He's in a flow with this particular group. You heard Steve Kerr say it, talking about how much music Jimmy and Brandon have been able to make together. They like it. Just it happens that way. They sort of understand each other. They've gotten a lot of minutes together. Remember Dalton Johnson coming on with us a few weeks ago saying the analytics have not been very kind to Jimmy playing with Jonathan Kuminga. That's been a struggle. He's been hurt a lot. They don't have as much time together. Brandon has had all of those minutes, all of that time, and he's clearly found his stroke. And so I am not predicting 18, 19, 20 points a game in the playoffs for Brandon, but his role has grown. He has taken the next step, and he appears to be the most ready to handle his first playoff action like a veteran would.
And he's getting the minutes. You're right about that. And he only got, 22 yesterday because nobody played because that game was over at halftime. But beyond that, 31, 36, and 36, the previous three, those are not only starter minutes, but those are finisher minutes. And so I see the impact that he is going to make. And, yeah, I don't think that he's going to shoot 52% from three over the next 11 games. It'd be cool if he did, but he's been on just an absolute banana land heater. I look at what Kuminga can be and what he has been at times, and he played better last night. Everyone did, but Kuminga off the bench, athletic, able to defend in ways that Pods can't. And I know that there's more of a logjam at his position, but I think about if Kuminga can play to the best of his ability, which we've seen at times of late, where he's hustling, rebounding, defending, and all the rest of it. I think that he gives them something that they don't otherwise have.
Quick aside, the Luka return to Dallas game is underway. There was a video tribute. Luka cried throughout the entire thing, visibly. Very, very emotional. The game has now started, and it very, very early, and right now it's a 10-5 lead for Dallas. One thing that I don't think we've mentioned with this game, it's obviously an emotionally charged room. The fans stood for the first 5 minutes of game action. Luka hit his first shot, so that's great. But I'm noticing that the Lakers, they need this game. J.J. Redick played his starters last night, and his quote was, "We've got four chances to win two games, and I want to take all of those chances." I know a lot of people thought they would sit guys in Oklahoma City last night to get ready for the emotion of tonight. Well, they played, and they lost. Now,
Luka got thrown out.
Luka got thrown out. Now, the NBA has rescinded the second tech. Like, yep. Whoops, sorry.
You can't rescind the ejection.
No, you can't. You can't go back to Oklahoma City. But I was just thinking about this. I think the Lakers will probably find a way to win this game tonight. They're a much better team. But there's a lot of emotions in the building. And what if for a second, what if it goes wrong? What if it goes wrong? We talk about the Lakers as if they've got this three seed lined up. They are one game clear of this bucket of teams. That's it. If they lose tonight and the Warriors win, their records are identical. So they're in this too.
Right, but the Warriors don't have the tiebreaker against the Lakers.
I understand that, but some other teams do. And all I'm saying is that if the Lakers can't work their way through this emotion and get a victory tonight, they are right there in this bucket with everybody else.
Without a doubt. And all of the teams from 3 through 8, they're all kind of in the same bucket, although Minnesota is half out of the bucket after last night's collapse with a 25-point lead or whatever it was, and you blew that game. So now you're a full game behind the group of four, which is a game behind the Lakers. So, yeah, anything can still happen. And the Lakers can lose this game and still be the three seed. It makes it a little bit tougher if you drop this one against Dallas to go ahead and secure the three, because right now you've got the ball in your court. You control your own destiny. If the Lakers win out, no one can catch them, and they are the three seed. They can't be the two. They can be anywhere all the way down from 3 to 8. The Lakers could get into the play-in as well. That still is a possibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I might almost predict that the Nuggets are going to end up in the play-in. But anyway, also just keeping an eye on this game as we're sitting here having a conversation and building on what Ramona just said to us earlier with regard to, she asked us, what did we think of that game between the Warriors and Lakers the other night? Because it was the first time that Jimmy's Warriors played Luka's Lakers. And she thought, it's pretty encouraging. I felt the same way. You and I had the conversation that afternoon. And I was like, I think the Lakers are an easier target now than they were for the Warriors, because Anthony Davis was such a matchup problem for them. And that game was very encouraging. I'm also just watching them right now. I've watched them a lot lately. I'm telling you, man, those five teams that we just talked about as championship contenders, Cleveland, Boston, Oklahoma City, Lakers, Warriors. And I said earlier on the show, I'm tempted to be like Cleveland, I'm going to knock them down a peg. They just don't have that look and that dude in my mind. I don't know, dude. I don't know. The Lakers defensively are not ready for the playoffs. That's what I feel. This Anthony Davis thing, it's not going to bite him long term. It's going to bite him short term. I'll put it this way. Of those Western Conference teams I mentioned, I would place them third. I would place the Warriors second in terms of likelihood.
It just depends on the matchup.
And I will say that the Thunder are most likely.
Yeah, and I said this earlier, and I will elaborate on it if you need me to, but if you offered me the Thunder or the field in the Western Conference to go to the NBA Finals, I would take the Thunder just based on how good they've been, how deep they are, the multitude of ways with which they can beat you. And I know the Warriors have done well against them this year, but you mentioned it before. That wasn't the Jimmy Butler Warriors, and it also wasn't the Chet Holmgren Thunder for a game and a half of it, because he got hurt in the one game when he tried to block Wiggins' dunk. I just look at how dominant they've been start to finish. They've got good scoring in a number of different ways. They got the league's MVP this season and a really good coach and a home court advantage that I think is underrated,
probably,
in a crowd that is going to be hungry to support their team, and I do think that matters.
That's interesting. I'm not going to say it doesn't matter in home games, but in the larger view, I don't know how far down the list anybody who's ever won a championship, and then you're listing off the reasons. How far do you have to go down before you get to the crowd?
I don't think too far in certain situations, you want to look at the first Warrior year, which reminds me a little of this Oklahoma City year where, the Warriors the previous 2 years were playoff teams under Mark Jackson. They won a series, and then the next year they lost in the first round. They were knocking on the door, and then the next year they were unbelievable in the regular season. And when you got to those playoffs, the Oracle crowds were bananas.
They're bananas,
I think you were still in L.A. at that point.
I was, yeah.
You certainly could see it and feel it on TV.
Yeah, To what level did that actually affect the outcome of games? I hear what you're saying.
I think to a level.
Yeah, maybe.
Not,
you know, like I think
it wouldn't
be
the headline.
I think of the Boston crowd 3 years ago when the Warriors won. And they got to Draymond
no
one
doubt.
Night. They had an effect on one night. They did not have an effect on the series. The better team won. The better team team overcomes that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the better team won. You could say that. I think that was a really close one. But in the games in Boston, Game 3 and Game 4, they took Draymond out of it. And it took Steph Curry having a generational performance in Game 4 to avoid you being down 3-1.
Right, but you ended up going back to Boston and you won it there.
Yep.
In Game 6.
You really
won
it in Game 4, in my opinion.
Yes, but I mean, even the series, I get where you're coming from. But anyway, that's like, you know, that's neither here nor there.
I do think that with a first time team, and I know Oklahoma City's been there before, but this team and this group and this crowd in this regular season, I do think that they become a tough out for any team having to go there.
No doubt. Well, they're the best. Like, they're phenomenal. They're a great team. And yes, they're going to be hungry. Their fan base is going to be hungry. But the bottom line is these things tend to happen somewhat slowly. And so I know that, you know, even Ramona was like, I don't know why we do that just because they're young. Well, history, that's why. History suggests that that's not where those teams are going. Now, I don't necessarily put the Thunder and the Rockets in the exact same boat. I know they're both young. The Rockets are younger. And the Thunder are going to have home court throughout and all of that stuff. They've got not just an MVP candidate. They've got the guy who's going to win. Houston, there will be possessions where they're like, how are we getting a bucket here? We're actually not sure. We don't even know exactly how to go about doing that, especially in playoff basketball. So I don't know, man. Like, I got all the respect in the world for Houston, but in the next breath, I'll tell you, I would be blown over shocked if the Rockets come out of the West. Blown over shocked. I do not see that happening at all.
I don't either, and I would be maybe less than blown over shocked if they made the Western Conference Finals, but I would be surprised, and they're the 2 seed. I would say that, to your point earlier about the 3 teams you'd put in the bucket, and it's more of a pale, and neither one of us had Houston in that group, I look at the way it might shake out, and if it's, you know, Golden State is the 6 and the Lakers are the 3 and Houston's the 2, and you give Houston the first round series win over the 7, which is not a guarantee, but for the sake of the argument, let's just do that. Whoever wins the Warrior-Laker 3-6 matchup, I think that they're going to beat Houston in the next round.
I agree with you.
So for Houston, their road as a 2 seed is fraught with peril. Even if you wind up with the Lakers and the Warriors in the 4-5, and it's, the Clippers as the 6, and the Clippers are able to beat, if Denver gets the 3, whatever the machinations are, Denver, the Warriors, and the Lakers, I would favor them over Houston in any series.
I got a question for you about this Clipper game coming up on Sunday. But first, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app and now coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.